welcome back to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University, it sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practices. From the magicians who seem to know how the magic works, Nathan. Hey, Nathan, how are you?
Good afternoon.
Are you a magician today? Here, are you going to show us something magical?
Yes. Yes, we've got some tricks
bag. All right, prepare to be amazed here. Who'd you bring with you?
Today we have Justin Siebert, professional in B2B, demand gen, and all things social and search. And we are excited to have him on the show today. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, thanks, guys. Excited to join you.
Today we're going to dive into B2B demand gen and what really works in digital advertising. And we're going to pick Justin's brain on some of those best tactics and approach. So if you think about, digital advertising has evolved greatly since the turn of the century. Social media as we know it really wasn't around. And since then, campaigns have become more and more complicated. Not only have Google and LinkedIn become behemoths in B2B digital marketing space, but we also have more targeting options than ever before. So in this podcast, Justin is going to help us learn how B2B advertisers can leverage the latest digital advertising tools to build and scale profitable lead gen programs. That was a mouthful, but we're excited to hear your insights on this, Justin. So let me start with this first question. You know, that introduction, we're talking about how Google and LinkedIn have become the biggest players in demand gen or demand generation space. From your point of view, why is that?
Yeah, I think it's because of what they're uniquely offering that's different than really any platforms that are out there, other than some competitors that have tried to catch up. And if you start on Google's side of things, at least where it's been historically, and we can talk about how it's kind of updated itself, it's modernized itself for today, but Google's benefit, search's benefit, is all about intent. So there's tons of great ways to reach people, as we all know, many different forms of advertising and marketing, but Google and search offer that way of reaching a person right when they're most interested in what you're selling. You're able to get them in front of them, have your offer, and then make your compelling case to try to convert them into raising their hand and talking with you. And on the flip side of things with LinkedIn, you're able to get all this great professional data that they've already shared directly with the platform. So you can reach people based on what company they work for or their company size or their industry. And then you can layer in their company title, the professional title, their seniority level, maybe what groups they belong to. So you're able to reach people based on exactly who they are professionally. And those are two things that are just the best ways to be able to reach people from a B2B perspective and why they're taking the majority of the advertising budgets for B2B demand gen.
Interesting. Let me ask you, I'm in the restaurant space, and we're looking to target small restaurants in Winston-Salem and in Charlotte. Is, from your perspective, is LinkedIn a great tool to do that based on what you just described?
So it's a great question. It depends on a couple factors. So with social media, one of the first things you're going to look at is what is the demographic that you can reach, and specifically within a geography. So there's two things on LinkedIn side. One is that its geographic options are a little bit more limiting than they are with Facebook, certainly, or with Google or some of these other platforms that are out there. So when you want to get as specific as that into Winston-Salem, and I'm very familiar with that area. Hey, my brother went to Wake Forest. I had my grand uncle grew up in Greensboro or lived in Greensboro. You might have to extend a little bit beyond just specifically those areas into a little bit of a larger metro area or North Carolina as a whole. So that would be one limiting factor. The second factor you would look at would be, is that industry or those owners going to be using LinkedIn as much as maybe some of the other verticals are? And I think that if you would pull up their data within LinkedIn, you would find them on LinkedIn, but I'm not sure how active they would be. So those would be my first two concerns. But in terms of reaching exactly who you're looking for, there's no doubt it'd be worth exploring to see, are you going to be able to reach a large enough audience that it makes sense there?
Okay. Interesting. You know, you talked about LinkedIn there for a second. How has Google evolved beyond just search?
Its transformation has been really fascinating to watch, since really 2000, 2001. And the first thing they kind of opened up was their display network and being able to offer people ways to reach people with banner advertising on the internet. In essence, it's like a modern day form of remnant advertising for magazines. so that you don't have to advertise directly with a publication. You can reach people kind of backdooring them on these various sites. Then they bought YouTube in 2006. So they've had these things around for a while, these different vehicles. They've had Gmail advertising around for a while. But the biggest change that's come in has been they've been building up their knowledge and their data capabilities over all of these years so that now you don't have to use those specific tactics just for reach, just for brand awareness, which is what they were primarily good for, with the possible exception of retargeting or remarketing, however you want to call that cyber stalking form of advertising. But you're now able to use it in a way to actually drive leads as well, and on the B2C side to drive sales. So that's something that really, outside of the last 6, 12, 18 months, they said they offered, but it wasn't that good. And now it's coming to the point where it can actually get you that return on ad spend that wasn't there before from a direct standpoint.
And it sounds complex, not necessarily complex, but loaded maybe is a better word. So we're in the restaurant space. We're also in the delivery space, the Uber Eats and DoorDash, and, you know, using very competitive keywords and things like that. So what can marketers do in highly competitive industries to get the most bang for their buck or leverage these tools in the best way?
I'd say the first one has to do with just testing in general, because this took all the, when you talk about digital marketing, digital advertising, it took all the benefits of the old days, and it still works today, but of direct advertising. And it's just more like direct mail advertising on steroids, because it's faster and it's less expensive to be able to do. So I would just say, if you're going to get involved in digital advertising, make sure that you always have that tester's mindset. But the very first thing, as a subset of testing, I would talk about conversion rate optimization. And that's just a way of saying, how can you get more of the people that come to your website to take the action that you want them to take? So in the example you're giving, how can you get more of the people to not just look at the menu, but to actually place an order? Or how can you reach, get more of the people to say, yes, I would like to contact you about your offering? And when you can take that rate, and let's just say that from an advertising standpoint with your ordering, that maybe you're getting a 3% conversion rate. Well, if you can take that 3% conversion rate, and if you could get it to 4% or 5% or even 6%, you're doubling the return that you're getting without spending any more advertising dollars or any more effort. So I would say that idea of conversion rate optimization, getting people to do what you want more often, is probably the most overlooked factor with really anything of websites or digital marketing or digital advertising today, because it has the most significant payoff, and people don't think about that. They just look at, how can I drive more traffic?
I'm going to change their mindset, make sure they add that to the strategy. Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you look at it, there's really two things that you're trying to do. The first is, how can you increase incentive? How can you make it so that the people want to raise their hand more, or that they want to put in their credit card information more? How do you make it more attractive? But the flip side too is, how do you remove friction, right? So if we think about these two things, and let's go back to maybe the B2B side for a second. If you are offering me a Brinks truck full of gold bars, if I just give you my information, I'll give you my social security number. I'll give you my kids' social security numbers if I really believe that to be the case. So you can ask me for a lot of things. But in reality, most of us aren't having an offer that attractive. So we have to reduce the friction. And this is the number one thing I ask everybody to really think about and to look at their own websites and what they're asking for. And that's the number of fields that you ask people to provide you. And a lot of times we'll ask people for information that makes our lives easier, but that's not really what we're in the job of doing. It's to make their lives easier. It's to reduce that friction. So do I really need to ask somebody's zip code? Do I really need to ask for a person's job title? Whatever these different things are, think about, do I really need that information, or is it something that I can get further down the line? So I would just encourage everybody to take that closer look and say, what's the minimum amount of information we actually need to ask for?
And you'll convert faster, or less, like you're saying, less obstacles in the way of them sharing or engaging with you. Interesting. That's really good. That's really useful. we're talking about strategies, and so let's say I'm a global B2B brand versus a more U.S. based. Does that strategy different if I'm trying to reach the globe versus just staying in the U.S.? Are there different strategic choices I need to make?
Well, putting aside first culture, because I think culture has such a huge impact on everything that you're trying to do, and understanding what those cultural differences are. But putting that aside for a second, let's talk from the search perspective. On the search side of things, it isn't that dramatically different outside of a few countries. And if you're talking Google, the good news is Google's number one in all but five countries around the world, China, Russia, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan being the exceptions. And even within those, you can still get coverage doing Google advertising in all of those places except China. In China, you're going to be wanting to look at probably at Baidu, their largest search engine. You can also look at 360 or Shenma or some of the minor ones, as well as getting into WeChat and some of those other different options. But with Baidu, you can't, as an American company, you can't open up an account on your own with Baidu. So if you were going to go that route, you would want to get a Chinese agency or work with someone in mainland China to be able to open that account for you. But outside of that, the search engine is really going to function in a very similar way to Google, especially in terms of the advertising options. So from a strategy standpoint, it's not going to look all that different.
And the barrier, like keeping in mind that what you're asking them probably is universal, isn't it? Like, don't ask them for things you don't necessarily need out the gate. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. I think you'd look at, and again, I would go back a little bit into cultural sensibilities. Like in Germany, for example, people are going to be a lot more gun-shy about what you're asking, so you want to offer. You want to ask for even less if possible, or if not, certainly make sure that your reasoning for why you're asking what you're asking for is very clear for them and that they agree and believe that it makes sense for them to share that. But to your point, following up on those things would be good for any culture.
My boss is German. And there are some cultural differences in how we engage with content and deal with our marketing. It's fun. Are we good on time in terms of break or? Okay, we got 2 more minutes. All right, I'll go ahead and go to break. Yeah. So Justin, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll hit it. We'll hit part two.
Okay, well, this will give you long enough just to pause and digest some of the mind-blowing stuff we're talking about here today, but there's a place you can learn more of these kinds of cutting-edge concepts. It's West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program, first graduate program of its kind in the country, focusing on strategic thinking, problem-solving, and informed decision-making. We're trying to do here today, get some informed decision-making data. The Data Marketing Communications Program prepares you for a career in all these exciting new fields by learning the innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those presented here each and every week. You can learn more DMC for Data Marketing Communications. DMC.WVU for West Virginia University.edu. DMC.WVU.edu. Okay, as we get past a bunch of letters and back to the meat of the matter here, let's pick it up.
Okay. Great. Hey, Justin, before I ask you another question, I came out the gate pretty fast. Would you take a minute and give us your background just a little bit? You clearly know what you're talking about. So what are you doing on the day-to-day that makes you an expert in this?
No, thank you. Background is I started doing this type of work in California in 2001 when I was living in Los Angeles. I was working for a company that sold gold and silver, and the shortest version of it is, at the time I started working for them, they were a $25 million a year company. And when I left in 2006, they were doing $35 million a year directly attributable to paid search. And I'm not taking credit for that. Amazing management team, amazing sales team. But at that time, people were still kind of reeling off the dot-com bubble, not really sure if digital was something that was going to continue to exist or not. And I was able to see firsthand that it really would. So when I moved back east for family reasons with my wife and burgeoning young family, I was kind of prepared for this. So I started in my agency. It's Direct Online Marketing. On the web, we're directom.com. We started back in 2006, and we specialized in driving leads and sales to our clients over the time, to the point that now we're one of Google's top 2% of all agencies they work with around the globe. So that's really what we hang our hats on, is providing those results to
Congratulations. That's a neat story.
Thank
and
you.
Your success. So, and we're thrilled to have you on. Let me jump into this next question. And so there's lots of things happening in the space and with campaigns. How can you track or leverage what the competition is doing? I know that's something that we're constantly trying to figure out, is what are the other guys doing, just to know, and then maybe even build off of some of that. So how are you leveraging that competitive information?
There's two or three tools that we like more than others that I'll share, and then I'll talk about some other ways as well. One of my favorite when we're talking about display is Moat. And that way, if your competition is advertising any kind of banner ads on the web, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they're able to crawl it, but they have this amazing database of showing you a wide variety of ads that they're using. So I love Moat, and there's a lot of information you can get for free from that particular company. I'm a big fan, when we get into search details a little bit more, I'm a big fan of SpyFu and SEMrush. Depending on which side of your pond that you live on, you might call it SEMrush or SEMrush. Those are both freemium models where you can get a little bit of information for free, more when you sign up for the service. But they have a pretty decent set of competitive data that we use. I would just say that any place that's crawling the web for competitive data, and this would certainly include companies like Compete, they're basing it on their own cookies and their spiders and what they can find. And I would say that they're good estimator tools. So I would think of them more from the perspective of using them to compare sites relatively and directionally. One thing that we rely heavily on is our relationship with Google. And so one of the things that we're able to get, that depending on your status within Google or your agency status, you may be or may not be able to get as well, but you can actually get competitor peer review sets where they won't tell you what a specific competitor is spending. You know, they don't want to trade that information to other advertisers, but they can tell you what a group of them are spending on average, and that's real data coming straight from Google. So we find that information, along with just industry benchmarks they can provide around click-through rates and cost per clicks and all of those fun kind of metrics, being really useful for us.
Wow, that's quite the perk in being the top 2% of in their inner circle. I suppose that data would be really valuable to some of your clients. So what about forecasting? Any tips or tools if I'm trying to lock down the forecasting for my strategy?
I'm a big fan of back of the napkin math. I do it, you know, really in an Excel file now, but really looking at a few different things. So starting with, what do you think the cost per click or the cost per unit, estimated cost per click, is going to be of getting a person to your site? Then what do you think the estimated conversion rate to lead is going to be from there? And then beyond that, what do you think the estimated cost per conversion from lead to sale is going to be? And then building out kind of a formula where you have a lot of different ranges. You can use tools to figure out, what do I think that cost per click is going to be? And then based on my own history and what the site's done previously, what do I think that click-to-lead conversion rate can be? And then hopefully you have some sort of an idea that you can start putting in some numbers for lead-to-sales as well. And then that's going to provide you a pretty big range, but at least give you an idea of what to budget for and what you should ask for from your company. And then from there, as you start to run campaigns and see what the numbers are like, then you can start tightening that down.
Okay, so we're down to the last minute, Justin. What piece of advice would you give to our current student body that's listening to this, our graduate students, in terms of B2B demand gen? And then how can they get a hold of you if they want to reach out and ask you some more questions, or if they're interested in working with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for me, the biggest thing is just getting in there and testing. And what data can you find? And if you're not doing this already currently, you're trying to build up a resume, I'd highly look at some of Google's tests that it has to offer. Will the information be a little biased towards Google and, you know, rah-rah, you know, that kind of stuff? It will, but there's really good data in there. And I think it's going to help make you a little bit more marketable when you're going out there. If you're looking for a job, or if it's just rising within your own company, you're going to get that knowledge to be able to test some things out. I guess that'd be the main thing I would offer very quickly. In terms of connecting, I'd love to talk with anybody, happy to help out, or just have a chat and talk digital marketing. And the best way would probably be on LinkedIn. If you look me up, Justin Seibert, last name is S-E-I-B-E-R-T, or follow me on Twitter. Love to connect there too as well. I have a really horrible Twitter handle, D-O-M-J-B-S, so Director Online Marketing, D-O-M, J as in Justin, B as in Boone, S as in Cyber, D-O-M-J-B-S.
Great. Thank you so much, Justin, for your time and all of your insights. Very interesting information, and hopefully, I'm sure you'll be a great resource to those who reach out. So really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thank you all. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.